only the victim was very much alive.
Nanites, I said. They're inside her? That's fixable. I can just set up an EMP wand and zap her with it.
Della looked thoughtful, then she nodded, but with an unconvinced air.
Maybe, she said. But the internal damage is probably already done. Scarring of organs, tiny leaks caused by laceration from their metal bodies, microscopic wounds that won't heal. She's probably going to die, James.
Why didn't you say something about it then?
I asked loudly. She shrugged.
I didn't think of it until now, until I thought about how she looks and where she's been living.
The situation was astounding to me. Earth was sending out colonists to Dust World every week, and I didn't know if anyone knew about that particular danger. Possibly Hegemony knew full well and just didn't care. The strong would survive and the weak would be left to their inevitable fate.
I'm sorry, James, she said. On Dust World, there's no cure. But you can try your EMP idea. In my experience, a person either heals over their scars or they can't, and they die.
Heaving a sigh, I said goodbye and closed the channel. I contacted my dad and gave him a rosy version of what Della had told me. He headed off eagerly to the hardware store to build an EMP device. It really wasn't a hard contraption to construct when you were only trying to disrupt something the size of a nanite. Next, I contacted a bio named Anne Grant. We'd had a thing going years back, but I hadn't talked to her in a long time. She came online warily.
James, she said. Just so you know, I'm married now. I've left the legions, and I...
Hey, I said.
It's okay. This isn't some kind of midnight booty call, but it's nice to see your face and hear your voice just the same.
She gave me a cautious, flickering smile.
Listen, I said. I've got a problem.
I described my mama's situation in detail, and she listened in concern.
Nanites? She asked, marveling. I remember them. So strange. We still can't make them reproduce themselves independently, you know. Only the Dust Worlders have managed that trick.
Yeah, that's great. Do you think anyone can help her? She thought about it, then shook her head.
I'm sorry, James. You could use a cellular regrow agent to speed healing after you've killed the nanites, but their tiny metal corpses will still be in her system. They'll clog her organs and arteries like sand and gears.
Then you think she needs a regrow, huh? I asked. That's what you're saying? Anne looked at me sharply.
Where'd you get that idea? She's a civilian, James. The data core isn't even tracking her body, much less her mind.
Yeah, I said, my thoughts moving down new paths.
Well, thanks for the professional info, Anne. It's been really nice talking to you.
She smiled.
You too. I hope everything works out. Oh, and James. I'm not really married.
I smiled.
Yeah, I know. Takes more than an amateur to pull off a lie on old James McGill.
She laughed.
I should have known better than to try.
We got off, and I was left thinking. There wasn't much time. If I knew my higher-up officers, they were likely to send me off to get permed on one mission or another until they got it right. Accordingly, I contacted my dad again. He had Etta with him, and they were at the local drone repair shop, picking up parts to build their EMP wand.
While you're at it, Dad, I told him, run that wand over yourself and Etta.
Do you really think...
Right, I'll do it. Repeatedly.
Good.
And Dad? Do you think you could bring Mama up here to Newark, to the mustering hall?
The what? Why?
So she can take a look at the Legion Recruitment Center. I know she's always been interested in the place. I want her to see it while she can still get around.
He stared at me through my tapper as if I'd gone insane.
James, he said slowly, I'm beginning to think you've gotten one of your strange ideas.
Not at all. I assured him. I just remembered they've got morning tours at the mustering hall, and I wanted to show her around.
Okay, he said, squinting at me in suspicion. He knew something was up, but he didn't want to blow a chance at helping Mom by asking too much about it. He'd learned a few things by raising a son like me.
Bring Etta along, too, I said, and be here by morning.
What? Morning? We'll have to drive all night.
Yeah. Better get started.
He nodded, giving me a bewildered but intense look.
All right. We'll be there.
Before he disconnected, I saw through his tapper he was moving fast. He trotted toward the exit at the automated store. He had an armload of stuff and a long night ahead of him. I'd given him hope. I knew that, and I prayed it wasn't a mistake. Maybe I could do something to help, and maybe I couldn't. It was hard to tell until I got into the thick of it. Checking the time, I saw it was just about 9 p.m. Doing a quick person search on my previous call, I located Anne. She was only about 20 miles away in a suburb. Shrugging, I decided it wasn't too far. A man might as well go for the gusto when faced with a future full of deadly unknowns. I rented an auto cab and fed it the address with a swipe on my tapper. It whisked me away, and I sat back to enjoy the city lights. Anne was surprised to see me at her door, but not too surprised. She knew me pretty damned well. Her talk of not having a husband, well, to a man like me, that was just about as clear an invitation as a woman could provide. After a little bit of quiet talking at the door, she led me inside. The rest of the evening, as they say, was preordained. Chapter 7. I woke up the next day a tiny bit later than I'd meant to. It was at least a half hour past dawn, and I had a hell of a lineup of activities. After jumping out of bed, I rushed to the shower. Moving as fast as a late soldier can, I cleaned up, dressed up, and raced to the mustering hall. Warm water splashed over me in the shower as I worked my tapper like a pro. I sent a message on to Drusus, indicating I'd been momentarily detained, with full apologies and lots of sirs written in there to cushion the blow. Speaking of which, Anne had snuck into the stall behind me and wrapped her small hand around my chest. She put her head against my back even as I finished my message and fired it off.
"Begging for more time, is that it?" she asked, smiling. "I know what that means, James."
"Huh?"
"Don't play coy with me. I saw you telling your officers you'll be late. You didn't even ask me if I could make a morning of it."
"Oh," I said, feeling a small twinge of concern. I'm a man who tends to overschedule himself under the best of circumstances, but this morning's punch list was getting unmanageable. I was supposed to report to Central, meet my parents for their tour, and satisfy Anne one more time, all at once. Thoughtfully, I looked down at her sweet face. She was quickly drifting to the top of the list. I'd always had a sort of nurse and patient thing going for her. She'd presided over more of my revivals than anyone else I knew. That made a man feel close to a girl, believe it or not. Sucking in a deep breath and chuckling so it didn't turn into a sigh, I grabbed her and went into motion. She was taken by surprise, but she soon melted.
"You haven't changed a bit,"
she said when she got her mouth free of mine for a moment. I didn't say anything. I had to make this good and quick-like. It was pressure, but I didn't mind that. I had fun anyway, even if I was distracted. Anne seemed bemused by what she took as an urgent, passionate need on my part.
"You weren't like this last night," she said. "Are you okay, James?"
she asked, cupping my face in her hands. We were up close, wet, and about as intimate as two people could be right then. I smiled.
"I'm fine, but today I'm headed somewhere sketchy. I might not come back."
Her face fell.
"A mission? Another deadly mission? Why don't you quit today? I'd like to spend the day with you instead of reading later on that you were permed."
For just a second, I considered her offer, but I had to reject it. "The legions are a way of life for me now," I told her. "Love it, hate it, it's my existence. I never get old, and I never seem to get enough." She sighed, hugged me, and let me go. I watched her dress in slow motion.
I'm telling the truth about this mission, I said. I'm not just shining you on for another girl, not this time.
Anne nodded without turning back to face me.
I know. That burst of passion this morning, that convinced me. That seemed like a man who knows he's about to die. Again.
Yeah, well, I'll see you as soon as I can, okay?
I gave her a kiss, but she never answered me. I left her place, and once I was out in the hallway, I began to race down the corridors of her apartment complex at a dead run. 20 minutes later, I was dropped off at the mustering hall. My parents were there, looking nervous. My mom was holding on to my dad's arm. Was she getting weak again already? She'd had a transfusion just a day or so ago. The condition seemed to be getting worse.
"Where's Etta?" I asked.
"She didn't want to come," my mom said.
"She found some new pile of mud and sticks way south of our house. She can't talk about anything else."
"Okay, well, come on. We've got to move."
They hobbled after me, and I noticed neither of them was moving as fast as they used to. How damned old were they now? Maybe I wasn't even sure. Dying and coming back all the time had made it so I could hardly keep track of my own age, much less theirs.
"Here,"
I said as we reached the door.
It was a smart door that I hadn't laid eyes on for a few years. It had a handprint reader on the door and a stained screen above it.
I had my dad apply his hand first. The door rejected him immediately. Part of the Legion recruiting process began right here. If you tested out as substandard in any obvious way, the door wouldn't even let you inside to be humiliated by further testing. I'd expected nothing else, but I still had him try 3 times. Each time, the door refused to open. There was one good thing about coming late. There was no line. We took our time. I walked my mama up to the door next, and she rolled her eyes at me when I repeatedly applied her hand to the door. At last, after she'd been rejected over and over again, she objected.
"James, if you're trying to make me feel better, you're failing miserably. I know I'm a broken-down old woman. I don't need some government AI to confirm it."
"I know, Mama," I said. "I'm sorry. One more time."
After a final rejection, I applied my tapper to the door, not my hand. The door went green and popped open. On the other side was an irritated-looking hog. I knew him, fortunately. He was none other than tech specialist Vill, the same man who'd steered me down to Varys on the lower deck of the hall years ago. He must have died in the recent squid invasion, however, because he looked a mite younger than he had when I'd last seen him. He had no paunch, and his hair was all present and accounted for. He squinted at me in shock.
"McGill?"
he asked.
"The James McGill?"
I smiled.
"That's me, Specialist Vill."
He chuckled and shook his head.
"What the hell are you doing here? And who do you have with you?"
"I'm sorry to bother you," I said, "but my folks have never been down here before. They kind of wanted to see how the process worked." He shook his head slowly.
"They give tours, but that's only on weekends. You should bring your folks back then, Centurion."
"Yeah, but they're only here for a day. Can you help me out?"
He stared at me, then looked around for any officers that might have been lurking around. There weren't any.
"I'm not supposed to.
The recruitment system is live. Recruits are trying out right now, and the crop is thin, let me tell you."
"It always is," I said sympathetically.
"Well, just for a few minutes?" The tech specialist sighed, and he turned his back on us. He was a man after my own heart. If he didn't see it, it had never happened. But I wasn't quite done pestering him yet.
"Hey,"
I said, poking him in the back, "how about letting the machine drop their imprints, you know? The data disks that look like a credit coin?
What the hell are you going to do with those?"
"Nothing," I said. "I'll return them in a few minutes. But you can't get the full effect if you don't have a disk to start tests and all."
Shaking his head, he tapped a few buttons, and a rattling sound rang out in the pan near the door.
I scooped up the coin-like data disks and led my parents quickly away.
"This is something, James," my mother said. "I didn't know you had this surprise tour waiting for us."
"Uh-huh. It's my big surprise.
I'm going away for a short time, and I wanted to show you something before I leave.
Away?
She asked in disappointment.
You're not going on deployment again, are you? What about Etta?
That girl can look after herself. She sure as hell can, my father muttered.
James, why are we walking so fast?
My mama demanded.
I'm feeling faint.
Instead of slowing down, I reached down and looped my arm under hers. I half-lifted her off the ground and hurried her along. I think my dad had an inkling of what was really going on. He lifted her other arm, and between the two of us, the old lady's feet hardly touched the floor.
This isn't the recruitment lines, she complained.
Yeah, I know. Now listen, when everything breaks, you guys head through that door right there. You hear? Go get your tram and head home. Don't call me. Don't call anyone. They stared at me in shock. My father nodded grimly, but my mom's jaw sagged open. She'd been treated to any number of my shenanigans back when I was a kid, but she didn't fully realize that I'd become a professional disruptor of peace as an adult. My dad was white-faced, but he was game. He didn't know what my plan was, but he understood the stakes well enough. I took the two tiny silver discs and put them into his hand, closing his fingers into a fist on top of them. Don't lose these. Not for anything. Let them cut off fingers and toes first. He nodded again, looking a little sick. I left them there, standing at the emergency exit. They looked so old and bewildered. It gave me a pang. At what point had they become the ones I had to care for instead of the other way around? I didn't know exactly when it had happened, but I didn't like the feeling at all. In order not to alarm them any more than I had to, I walked away at a brisk but less than desperate pace. The second I could, I ducked down the escalators toward the Legion booths in the basement. I was surprised to see that the Varys booth wasn't there anymore. That meant they had to have been moved upstairs. Could that have been due to my influence? Nah, I told myself. It was never good for a man to grow a swelled head. The Legion had proven itself over the years, after all. We were no longer shunned. We were still infamous, yes, and nothing like respectable. But people had decided we had value after all. Hey, Varys, shouted a tough-looking non-com from Legion Solstice. You lost? I flipped in the bird without a glance and headed for the bathrooms. Once inside, I entered the first stall and locked the door. There was no one in the place, fortunately. I made the mistake of glancing at my tapper then. I'd been avoiding that all morning. There had to be 15 red message lines on there. I was over an hour late for Central, after all. Fumbling in my urgency, I dug a plasma grenade out of my pocket. Then I took my combat knife off my belt and engaged in a little bit of field surgery on the device. The bathroom door banged open while I worked. Someone stalked into the room. Hey, Varys, he said. You shitting yourself in there? I've got a few friends outside. We want to talk to you. Just a minute, I called to him, gritting my teeth as I worked on my grenade. Officially, I wasn't supposed to have explosives on me in the mustering hall. As an active-duty legionnaire, a loaded pistol and a combat knife were acceptable, but not a grenade. Fortunately, I'd never been a fan of persnickety regulations. "You're not getting out of this so easily," the man said. "We're going to have that talk, hotshot." "Yep, we sure are," I said in an agreeable tone. Muttering, he left. I finished my work, dropped the grenade into the toilet, and flushed it right down. Right then, I wished I hadn't locked the stall door. I flipped the tab up quickly and nervously. Then I headed for the door. There wasn't going to be much time left. Stepping outside, I saw three men waiting for me. They were all Solstice. They saw my rank, and they looked surprised. I was a centurion now. The days of rough and tumble, enlisted rivalry between the legions were mostly in the past for me. At the officer level, things became political. You screwed each other over with budgets, mission assignments, and promotions, not your fists. "Why didn't you say you were an officer?" my original harasser complained. "I don't recall you asking, veteran." Shaking his head, he waved, and the three of them began to slink away. They'd been more than ready to start something with a Varys man on his own, but messing with an officer would have resulted in more than a day in the stockade. "Wait a second," I said, reaching out a hand and hooking him by the back of his collar. He wheeled around snarling, but I pointed back into the bathroom with a friendly expression. "You want to have some fun? Off the record, just man to man?" He looked at me warily.
"One to one?
That's right. Unless that's too scary for a solstice veteran. I hear you still pee your sleeping bags at night, and I wouldn't want to scare you any further."
He showed his teeth, which were stained and filthy. He flexed his knuckles, and he nodded at me. He was a big boy, not as tall as I was, but broader of shoulder.
"Step right in there," I said. "I'll follow a minute later so it doesn't look funny."
"You're on, Varys."
He stalked into the bathroom alone as his friends had all moved on by now. I did a U-turn and hurried for the escalators. There couldn't be but a few seconds.
Crump!
It was a weird sound, one I knew all too well. A plasma grenade had gone off and weaponized the restroom. Plasma grenades were odd weapons. They grabbed up whatever was around them, changed their form, and blew everything outward as shrapnel. Even water turned into 1,000 tiny needles, liquid transformed into solids, and blasted in every direction at once. Alarms went off all over the hall. People froze and looked around in shock. Terrorism, a squid attack, some kind of horrible error in the maintenance AI, who knew what had gone wrong? Someone triggered the evacuation script, and the doors flew open. People trotted by me for the exits, but I didn't hurry. I walked with Varys pride. When I stepped outside, I squinted up at the sun and summoned an auto cab. Then I took out my tapper and swore. There were twice as many messages as before. It was a good thing I'd silenced all the tones, buzzers, and ringers. The damn thing would have made it hard to concentrate if I'd been listening to all that. "Damn," I said aloud. "They must really want me on this mission." Chapter 8 The cab took me straight to Central, but before I could make it to the elevators, a group of stern-looking hogs encircled me.
"What's up, fellas?" I asked.
"You're under arrest," barked the most disagreeable-looking individual. "We're here to escort you down to the lower lab complex."
"That's mighty friendly of you guys," I said. "It just so happens that's where I'm headed."
He snorted. "Don't even think of taking any detours, McGill."
"Wouldn't dream of it. No way I can get lost with you guys crowding around. And to think people say hogs have no sense of hospitality."
They fell silent on the long elevator ride into the lower bowels of Central. When we arrived at last, we passed through some pretty serious security. I was relieved of every weapon I had on me.
"This way, Centurion," said a fine, tall girl with a pretty face and bony arms.
She looked like a runway model to me, not your typical government type. I followed her with gusto, but my high spirits soon faded. Drusus, Graves, and Winslade were waiting for me in the dark labs ahead.
"What's the drill today, sirs?" I asked in a hearty tone.
"McGill," Graves said seriously, "what have I told you about having respect for other people's time?"
"I do believe you have admonished me to show more respect on any number of occasions, sir. In fact, let me congratulate you on your promotion to the high rank of Primus. It was greatly overdue."
Graves stared at me in an unfriendly fashion.
"We're discussing kicking you off this project, McGill."
"I'd say that was a shame, I'm sure, if I knew what the project involved."
"He's hopeless," Winslade said. "Exactly as I told you. Unless you overrule me, Drusus, I'm kicking him out of the entire Legion."
"On what grounds?" Drusus asked.
Winslade sputtered and pointed at me.
"Can't you see, sir? Nearly 3 hours late. Reports of criminal activity fill his morning."
"Criminal activity?" I gasped. "What? Since when is it against the law to bed a retired Legionnaire?"
They all glanced at me. "And who might that be, McGill?"
Graves asked. I smiled. I had them curious now.
"You remember that bio who quit after the invasion?"
"Oh, please," Winslade scoffed. "Don't tell me it's Anne Grant."
"Well, how about that? Somebody remembers Miss Grant by name. Is there perhaps a bit of latent interest there?"
"Yes, I remember her. A very sensible girl by appearances. I'm surprised her judgment hasn't improved."
He's just distracting you, Primus, Graves said. That was a shocker. I hadn't expected Graves to out me so offhandedly.
McGill, Graves continued. Do you realize there's a recruiter from Mustering Hall who's just come out of a revival machine upstairs? He's demanding that you be arrested.
He wouldn't happen to be from Legion Solstice, would he?
Thanks for verifying your involvement,
Graves said. Now hold on, I said. If he's complaining along formal channels, it's just sour grapes, sir. That Solstice man had it coming. It was just a little joke anyway.
A joke? Thousands of credits in damage. A ruined day of recruitment. You think that's funny?
Well, Graves turned away from me to face Drusus.
Equestrian, I hate to say it, but I concur with Primus Winslade. McGill should be off the mission roster. Hell, he should probably be removed from this service entirely.
Drusus hadn't said much for the last several minutes. He'd just been staring at each of us, listening. Now he looked both thoughtful and sour at the same time.
McGill is uniquely qualified for this highly hazardous duty.
It's my decision, and I'm standing with my previous choice. McGill goes. Get him suited up.
Sir, I said, I'm proud to be your man. I'll make Legion Varus proud again.
To their credit, no one grumbled openly. Winslade looked like someone had kicked his cat, however. His teeth were clenched and his eyes were slits.
May I be excused, sir?
He asked Drusus.
I've got duties to attend to.
Drusus nodded. Graves will provide the briefing and oversee the insertion. Good luck, gentlemen. Drusus left us, and I suspiciously watched Winslade scamper off a moment later. It didn't take a genius to know he was running off to report the situation to Turov. If Drusus had noticed, he apparently didn't care. Soon, there was no one in the lab other than Graves, a bunch of techs, and yours truly. I was given a suit, and it looked familiar, sort of.
Is that a teleport suit, Primus? I asked Graves. Modified for human usage, yes.
The costume was a metallic black mesh with a durable insulated interior. It was kind of like a spacer's service uniform, or maybe a high-tech diving suit. There was a power pack, however, and a digital gauge on the front. The original teleport suits had been built by the cephalopods with some stolen Empire tech thrown in. This suit looked like it was built to hold a man instead of a squid. The old ones had been huge and floppy, but in comparison, this model looked like it would be a tight fit for a man my size.
So, where am I going? I asked. And what kind of team do I have going with me? You're flying solo, Graves said. This is the only working suit we have at the moment.
Why is that?
The original suits don't hold up to extensive testing, and they apparently required maintenance that we didn't understand. They began self-destructing shortly after your team's involvement during the mission.
Huh, I said. That's weird. He narrowed his eyes in my direction. I could tell that he suspected I knew something about these suits that I wasn't sharing. The fact was, the original suits had required usage of the Galactic Key to function. I'd hacked their security system, in essence, to get them to work. Trying to use them without understanding that step had probably resulted in the accidents he was describing. My face was a total blank, and I barely looked curious as I rubbed at the fabric of the new model.
"Who's been testing this one out?" I asked him. "Several hogs. They were scared at first, but we managed to do some small jumps repeatedly without an incident. Cannibalizing parts of the squid-made suits and designing components of our own, we managed to construct a unit that can reliably fly distances up to 100 meters without error."
I stared at him. 100 meters? Like, about the length of this lab?
Precisely.
So, where am I supposed to be going?
That's classified. Follow me.
Troubled, I did as he asked. We left the bustling techs behind and retreated to a small office off the main lab chamber.
Primus, I asked him.
Are you kidding me? You're expecting me to jump off-world, aren't you? This suit is a jury-rigged mess, I can tell just by looking at it.
That might be true, he admitted. It's experimental at best.
Why don't we just have the squids cook us up an improved model? I asked him. His face pinched up in a frown.
You remember that fusion bomb you set off on Throne World, their capital?
Of course, it was my finest hour.
Yeah, well, where do you think they manufactured their teleport suits?
I squinted at him for a second.
Oh, I said.
I get it. There aren't any more teleport suits coming from the squids. That's a crying shame. But I still don't get why I'm being sent off to test it in such a fired-up hurry.
Because we have an emergency. The Magua are coming back. They've crossed the border into Province 921, and they'll arrive here soon.
My eyes bugged out at this news.
You mean the Nairbs, right? I asked. No. The actual Magua. The Galactics are coming themselves this time. Battlefleet 921, or at least a contingent of that force, has been ordered to return to our province and put down what is seen as a local rebellion.
A rebellion? I haven't seen anything about that on the vidnets.
That's because we're the rebels, as far as the Magua are concerned.
I blinked at him in confusion.
When did we declare independence from the Empire? In their view, that happened when we fought a war with the cephalopods and won. Now that the squid worlds are under our control, we're a danger to the Magua. We're in violation of a list of galactic laws.
Right, I said thoughtfully. The only reason the Empire had survived for thousands of years was their strict maintenance of the status quo. Individual member civilizations weren't supposed to grow, research new tech, or even fight serious wars against one another. By keeping thousands of species frozen in development, the Empire had been able to keep us from challenging their power or otherwise disrupting what worked well for the elite races at the top.
If they think we're a danger, I said,
well, there's only one cure for that.
Exactly. Extinction of the rogue species. We can't confirm that's their plan, but we have to assume it's a possibility.
Okay, but I still don't get what my part is in all this. Graves poked at the suit. It rustled, and the metallic links clinked audibly.
You're the only man we have that has successfully teleported to remote locations alone and survived. That's why Drusus is putting this on you, despite everyone's misgivings.
Uh-huh, I said, not bothering to argue with him about it.
Now, he said, I want you to try to absorb the critical nature of this mission, McGill. I want you to be on your best behavior. You're not going out there to slaughter anyone. You're going out there as a spy, not a fighter. Your onboard body cams will do most of the work. All you have to do is take a look around and get back here with whatever you can find out in 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
Yes. This suit model has several improvements. One is that it holds enough of a charge to power 2 jumps. You'll fly out there, and after 5 minutes, you'll teleport back.
What if I can't do it? What if I'm captured or killed in that amount of time?
He poked at the suit's digital readouts. That's all taken care of. The suit is on a timer. You'll be pulled back here after 5 minutes, dead or alive.
I said without enthusiasm, but after a moment, I grinned.
Well, okay then. I'll do it. Of course you will, Graves snorted. I'm not asking for volunteers. I'm ordering you to suit up and fly as soon as the techs have the suit ready.
Just one more thing, Primus. Where am I going exactly?
He looked at me in surprise. I thought that would be obvious. We've spotted the approaching battle fleet, as I said. You're going to pop out there and take a look at their ships, hopefully learning of their intentions. Don't let them see you or detect you. That's an order.
I followed him back to the labs, doubtfully. That's a hard one, sir, I said. Your people are in control of where I end up. If they miss and I end up in the middle of the bridge on the flagship, I think somebody might just notice me.
Let the techs handle that part. You've got no choice anyway. None of us do.
I stopped following and lowered my voice as we came into view of the launch pad. Techs were swarming the suit, charging it up.
Sir, I whispered.
I'm beginning to question the wisdom of this entire venture. I mean, if the Magua are already pissed and view humanity as a possible threat, won't this push them over the edge?
He looked at me, seriously. You could be right. Hell, I don't know the answer to that. But the ruling council of Earth has made the call. You and I are just soldiers caught up in following orders from the top. It's my opinion that they already know the Magua are coming here to remove us, and they're trying to get confirmation.
But what good will that do?
Earth is building a new fleet. It's last ditch, but we have to do something. If it comes right down to it, the ruling council is going to ambush the battle fleet the second it shows up. But they want confirmation from you first.
The magnitude of the situation was beginning to sink into my thick skull about then. Don't get me wrong, I'm not a man who's easily spooked. But this was big. Real big. They suited me up, taught me how to operate the digital controls, and hooked me up to some wires. Then they all backed up like I was wearing a suicide vest. I didn't blame them because I was, sort of. The timer on the suit started up by itself a few seconds later. That was rude, in my opinion. I thought a man ought to be able to at least flip a switch before he consigned himself to death. But then, maybe I was old-fashioned. The world shifted around me. It blurred and wavered. I was losing coherency as a singular mass. Soon, I knew, I'd turn into a smoky semblance of myself and poured out. It occurred to me as I began to fade from existence that Turov and Winslade might have been right. What if they knew it was a stupid idea to piss off the Magua like this? What if they had some inside knowledge on what the Magua were planning and what the mission orders were for the battle fleet? It was a disturbing thought, but it was too late to act on it now. The last thing I saw before the world blurred completely was Graves. He was giving me a lazy salute. I would have saluted back, but I was already insubstantial. A moment later, I ceased to exist on my fine green homeworld of Earth. Already, I missed the feel of her under my feet. Chapter 9. The next moment I was aware of was all wrong. I'd expected to appear inside an alien ship. My immediate plans for such a case were still in my mind, in fact. They were vague, but I believed the simplest plans work best. First off, I'd hide. That was critical. I was supposed to appear aboard the Magua ship in a hold of some kind, which would have made stealth easier. From there, I was to learn what I could and teleport out again. How much intel I could gather in 5 minutes was a big question mark to me, but I hadn't planned this boondoggle in the first place. Unfortunately, when my awareness returned, I wasn't on a Magua ship. I wasn't even in a teleport suit. I was somewhere else that was depressingly familiar.
What's his APGAR score?
He's an 8.5. We're not going to get better than that. He's breathing. Pull the oxygen. Get his lungs working.
I was surrounded by bio people, orderlies, and techs. A strange smell assaulted me. It was organic, wet, even hot in the nostrils. It was a smell like thick urine, maybe. I knew it all too well. It was the smell of my own rebirth.
"McGill, can you hear me?" Graves asked. My mouth worked, but no words came out. I choked instead and coughed up a load of fluid from deep within my newly formed lungs. "McGill, damn you. There's no time. I order you to report."
"He can't even talk yet, Primus," the bio said.
She seemed defensive about me, but I felt gauntleted hands grasp my shoulders and haul me up onto my feet. I pitched forward and almost fell on my face. Graves was standing in the way. My weak fingers grasped his uniform. I couldn't see yet. The world was a blur. I felt like I was underwater during a rainstorm. Something hard and cold touched my temple. I knew it was the muzzle of a pistol.
"Graves?"
I managed to croak out. The cold touch of the gun left my head.
"You can talk? Good. We have questions."
"Here," said the bio. "Here are some clothes, McGill."
"He won't be needing those where he's going,"
Graves said. I took the clothes with floppy fingers anyway and stumbled out of the revival chamber.
I started to get into the pants before a hard shove nearly knocked the clothing from my jittery hands. Graves marched me down the hallway buck naked, my legs functioning better with each step.
"Sir," I managed to ask, "is there some kind of problem?"
"Yes, McGill," he said angrily. "The trouble is we sent a moron up into space to perform a spying mission. Somehow he never came back."
"I didn't? How long has it been?"
He stopped and looked at me. I could see him well enough now to make out his craggy features. His eyes, they were the color of steel, and even less forgiving.
"You screwed up," he said. "I don't know how, but you did it. The Magua have sent a transmission from the battle fleet on a deep link call to Earth. They said a spy was apprehended after causing considerable damage to their ship."
"Yeah?" I asked. "Was there a description of this madman?"
"No. All humans look the same to them. But they did run a DNA check and flags were tripped. You were supposed to have been permed many years ago, remember?"
"Oh, yeah," I said. "Good times."
"Right. Well, now, we're setting you up for another execution. It will be verified digitally and carefully choreographed. We're transmitting this to the Magua ship as evidence that we've done the job they ordered us to do years back."
While he talked, I struggled to get my wet, rubbery limbs into the uniform still clutched in my hands. I always had more trouble than most people did with smart clothes. Each new uniform started off sized for your typical human. At 2 meters in height, it always seemed to take a few minutes for a fresh suit to believe it really had to stretch itself out to the limit.
"That's a damned good idea, sir," I said.
"I thought you'd like it."
Graves hustled me up the hallway to the door at the end. I could tell I was still inside Central, and the stale, cold air of the hallway told me I was probably underground on one of the countless lab levels. What happened next made me feel a little bad, but really, I argued internally, Graves had brought it upon himself. Honestly, you just can't tell a man like myself that you're going to execute him and expect him to stand around waiting for it to happen. If his had been a standard execution, mind you, I wouldn't have cared much. But it was the permanent part of the equation I didn't like. I wasn't overly attached to one carpet of human skin or another. If I died, well, so be it. But no one likes the idea of ceasing to exist without at least being given a fighting chance. At that point, regulations, orders, and the like all become moot to me. I reflected as I tripped him up that Veteran Harris would have known better than to let his guard down around me. He would have expected a fight. Harris had tried to kill me personally a lot more times, after all, than Graves had. Graves pitched forward with a grunt, and I landed a knee on his spine to keep him down. I reflected how unusual of a situation this was. I'd never tangled with Graves like this before. It felt wrong to me somehow. I regretted each hammer blow I landed on the back of his thick skull. Graves, however, wasn't a lightweight. Long after a man should have given up, he surprised me. He managed to twist his pistol around and fire a shot over his bloody shoulder. Damn, that stung! I'd been burned in the throat. I was seriously impressed. What a fine shot he'd managed to make, given the circumstances. He'd nailed me in a vital region even with his face planted on a steel deck and more hard punches on his brain case than most drunks get in a weekend. None of it had taken him out or spoiled his aim. Another man might have called it luck, but not me. I like to give credit where credit is due. I rolled off him and lay back against a cold, puffcrete wall. My lungs were burning, and I heard a raspy, gargling sound. It was me, trying to draw a breath and failing. I knew I was a goner even before Graves climbed painfully back to his feet. His face and the back of his scalp were a mess. Between desperate breaths, he pointed his pistol at me. With my right index finger, I swizzled up a load of blood from my larynx. I couldn't talk or breathe, but I had a little time left before I passed out. I traced out letters on the steel floor. They were smeared, dark, almost black. Lots of people think blood is red, but really it's almost black when you get a lot of it all at once and it starts to dry. Graves watched me spelling. He didn't fire, and that was a good thing. Maybe he was curious, or maybe he thought it was only right that a defeated man be allowed to write his own epitaph, as long as he kept it short, mind you. What I wrote made him frown.
I remember? He asked. You remember what, McGill?
But that was it for me. I sagged over and slumped, eyes staring. I've died any number of times, and I can assure you that's what was happening to me right then. Chapter 10. It was a man named Claver who'd taught me the trick of getting pissed off people to revive you. He'd said he kept coming back to life despite all odds by teasing his killers with a hint of information and leaving them wanting more. It was like show business in a way. If your audience wanted a repeat performance, why, by damn, they'd come back later on and pay to see it again. Coming out of the revival machine this time around, I was a bit more concerned. Was this all a waste of time? He seems groggy, but his numbers are off, the bio said.
I don't care, said a familiar, gravelly voice. As long as he can talk, I'm taking him out of here.
Suit yourself.
Graves again?
Great.
Sir, asked another voice, one that was depressingly familiar. Let me get him moving for you. There will be no more funny business this time around.
Suit yourself, Harris, but don't kill him until I give the order.
I wouldn't dream of it, promise.
They soon had me off the table and staggering out the door. The two men half dragged me down the hallway. I let my feet flop and twist. Why not? This sorry version of James McGill might as well enjoy every moment he had left. My eyes cleared before I reached the offices. They thrust another uniform at me, and I struggled to get into it. Both men had pistols in their hands. They weren't taking any more chances with me.
Is this to be another public execution, sir? I asked Graves.
The last one went off the rails.
No, he said. We're done with that. We uploaded my suit cam files to the Magua, proving you'd been killed. Hopefully that will make them happy, but I doubt it.
Well then, I said, why did you get me started with breathing again?
You may not remember, but the last version of James McGill indicated he remembered what happened on the Magua ship. I don't know how that could be true, but we can't take any chances. We need intel.
Ah, I get it, I said. I'm supposed to tell you.
Excuse me, Primus, Harris interrupted, but this is classic horse shit. McGill doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. He's just going to make up some crap to delay his next killing, and we're wasting time.
Graves looked at him.
I'm distinctly aware of that possibility, Harris, but this is an unusual situation. On the off chance he knows something, I've been ordered to...
Right about then, the situation took a radical turn. I know I didn't see it coming, even though it was apparently my idea. A figure appeared behind Graves and Harris. I was sitting on the floor in front of them, minding my own business. The room flickered, but I don't think they noticed. They weren't as attuned to the teleportation effects, not having taken as many jaunts into the blue as I had. What gained my full attention, however, was the figure himself. He was undeniably familiar and menacing. Tall, suited in a costume of dark mesh, I found him an imposing figure. No wonder people were leery when I came near. The figure was none other than James McGill. He was some other copy of James McGill from the past, of course, probably the one who'd ported out into deep space and caused some kind of serious interplanetary ruckus with his actions. Quick as a cat, he shot both Harris and Graves. They only had time to follow my shocked gaze and look around behind them before they caught a quick ride through the revival machine.
Damn, I said. That was nice shooting, James the former.
Thank you. You're too kind, James the latter, said the other. He stepped forward warily and crouched in front of me. I could tell he had a healthy respect for himself, as it were. It made me feel a puff of pride. Even unarmed and sitting on a steel deck, I was enough to make another armed version of myself worry.
The question now, the intruder said, is what are we going to do about me and you?
This is a whole new area of galactic law we're breaking right now, I agreed.
Yes, it is, he agreed.
I thought about it for a few seconds, eyeing my older self. He wasn't in good shape. He looked burned somehow. After about 10 seconds, I came to a clear conclusion. "You should probably just shoot me and report in," I said. "They'll want the cam feed that your suit recorded, that's for certain. I'm just a copy who knows nothing useful." He nodded. "I was thinking along those lines," he admitted. "But it's a bit more complicated than that." "Tell me," I said, "and talk fast." He began talking, and I began listening. The longer we talked, the more concerned I became. The situation was complicated. A team of hogs showed up and began hammering on the door just as we were finishing up our little talk. I reached for Graves' fallen gun, but my copy shook his head. "No," he said. "No sense in us both getting killed again." "Okay. You going out in a blaze of glory?" "That's the plan. I'm screwed anyway. I did mention the radiation, didn't I?" He had. One side of his face, in fact, was slagged and peeling. Both his eyes still worked, but one of them didn't have a full eyelid to close over it anymore. He figured he'd already gotten enough rads to kill a gorilla, and it was just a matter of time. The older James threw open the door, roughly, making it bang against the wall. I don't know quite what the hog security team was expecting to see, but I'm pretty sure that the other me wasn't even on the list of possibilities. James loomed large, pistol raised, and he shot the first hog in the face. A second head popped into view, and he shot that too. The rest of them scrambled to the sides and clawed out their weapons. Stupid hogs. They should have had their weapons in their hands before they hammered on the door. The situation was unfair, really. James McGill was fully in the fight, more than willing to die for just the cussedness of it. But the hogs still valued their own skins. It's hard to fight a skilled man who doesn't care if he lives or dies, ask anyone who's done it. Before it was over, 5 hogs lay dead in the hallway. That was damned good killing. The total body count was 7, including Harris and Graves. Damned fine. When the other James was down and out at last, they came in for me. I was still sitting on the floor, but I was clapping now. "Did you see that?" I asked a hog veteran. "He was hurt to begin with, too." The veteran put his pistol into my face. I didn't flinch, but I did look him in the eye.
"That was a copy of you, wasn't it, McGill?"
he asked, his sides heaving.
"I think you might be right."
They hustled me to my feet, and I walked out with my head held high. They watched me like I was some kind of wild animal. I suppose that was only natural. Under the proper circumstances, I was capable of some pretty awful behavior. The next stage of my day was the best of all. I got to preside over the rebirth of Harris and Graves. When they came back to life, coughing and sputtering, I clapped them on the back like old friends.
"You missed it, Harris," I said. "That was some fine shooting. Best I've ever done. 7 dead, and all of it done with 1 bad eye.
"Fuck you, McGill," he managed to croak out.
Despite my welcoming attitude, they were both madder than puffed toads. Chapter 11. If anything, Graves had an even worse attitude than Harris once he was breathing again. He reached for the nearest available weapon with trembling fingers. "Let's not start all that again, Primus," I said.
"Don't listen to this crazy ape, sir," Harris called out. "Put him down quick-like."
"You killed me, McGill,"
Graves snarled at me.
"You son of a bitch. I'm your superior officer."
"Yes, sir, that's all quite true, and yet at the same time it isn't so. I, the person standing here before you, am innocent of that heinous crime. On behalf of that other, psychotically disturbed and guilty version of myself, I must apologize profusely, and if it helps console you, your sacrifice wasn't made in vain, sir."
"What are you blathering about?"
he asked, narrowing his eyes to suspicious slits. "Just what I said, sir. This new version of McGill you see before you has it all. I'm in perfect condition, unlike the one that died in a glorious battle with a squad of hogs. I'm also in possession of several key facts that you and all of Earth need to know."
that shit again? Harris demanded angrily. The last time you said that, your copy came in and shot us.
That will not happen again, Veteran Harris, I insisted. I quickly filled Graves in on recent events while he dressed and cinched up his uniform, peering at me with skepticism the whole time. Both he and Harris seemed to be in sour moods, but I didn't think the situation warranted it.
So, Graves said, one version of you came back here hours late and injured.
That's right. I came back. Mission accomplished.
Hardly, Graves complained. You haven't even told me what the other version of McGill told you.
That's the critical part, I admitted. But I need to get your agreement first that we are square. These hogs here are holding me under false arrest. This version of McGill hasn't done a damned thing.
We don't need anything from McGill, Harris said. His suit recorders would tell us everything.
One of the hogs, the one who was hanging onto my left arm, spoke up at that.
We can't do that, Veteran. We already tried. The teleport suit was damaged and all the data was lost.
Graves looked at me with bitter suspicion. I shrugged in response.
We could torture it out of him, Harris suggested.
No, Graves said, considering the idea. He would just lie to us, and it would waste a lot of time.
He sighed at last in irritation.
All right, McGill, what do you want for your report?
Nothing special. All I need is my rank restored and all my crimes, known and unknown, forgiven.
That's way too big of an ask.
Yeah, I said, not bothering to argue. How about this, then? Just forget whatever I did for the last 6 hours or so, the whole mission. Graves rolled his head back.
All right. But no holding back. Tell me what you know.
It went like this, Primus, I began, but Harris objected again.
Primus, he said, don't tell me you're faulted for this. He's just gonna make up some wild story. He doesn't know shit from crab cakes about any Magua ship.
I was beginning to get tired of Harris and his bad attitude. He'd never enjoyed anything more than seeing me executed, but it seemed like he was pushing his luck today. I made a mental note to help him change his mind if I got the chance. Graves waved for Harris to be quiet.
I agree to your terms, McGill, he said, but only because we don't have much time. Now, for the love of God, tell me what the hell you did out there.
At this point, I gave a cold look to the two hogs holding onto my arms. At a nod from Graves, they reluctantly released me. I struck an easy, thoughtful pose while Graves and Harris shivered and wobbled, dressing themselves with rubbery fingers. This is second hand, sir, I began, clearing my throat. But it's the best we're going to get at this point. James, the other version of me with the mean streak, he popped out there to intercept Battlefleet 921, which, as I understand it, is the vicinity of Spica right now.
That's correct. Go on.
The problem was one of accuracy, sir, I said. Apparently the techs did a good job of matching velocity and momentum, but they put that other James McGill right up against the hull of the ship, rather than teleporting him inside the ship itself.
Hmm,
Graves said, taking notes and recording me with his tapper.
The techs will be interested to hear that.
As the Magua fleet was in a warp bubble at the time, well, you know, there's a lot of deadly radiation inside those bubbles. James got burned despite the shielding in his suit.
Makes sense. Go on.
He got inside the ship somehow, I said, but it took more than 5 minutes to do so. Graves stared at me for a second.
Okay, but there's a snag. How is it he didn't just ride it out and get automatically teleported home?
Good question, I said.
Damn straight it is,
Harris barked. His eyebrows were beetled together in a harsh frown. Fortunately, I continued, unperturbed, I've got a good answer. The hard landing on the ship's hull damaged the auto-return circuitry. James was forced to break in.
Already off script,
Graves muttered, making more notes.
I thought about calling foul on that one. What else could that poor McGill do? He could either float around out there and fry, or he could break into the ship. Didn't seem like much of a choice to me. Anyway, as I understand it, he got aboard, took some vids, then teleported back. They both looked at me with questions.